Like a relentless.
It is 9:35. You're listening to 100.5 FM. It's gone a little off the rails here, but that's okay. You know, that was good music. That was fun. Why not? It's the Friday before St. Patrick's Day. And those guys are fabulous, as you obviously heard. Thais, if you were listening, I'm going to call you because, well, I think they have good music for outdoors. I do. Joe Bruno, you still here? You still breathing?
Yeah, I was thinking, can I breathe enough to play a bagpipe? And the answer would be no. I'd be on the floor. But it was fun watching them play it.
It was
watching the fingers move.
Yeah, because I've never, you know, obviously I've seen bagpipes forever, but you're never up close like that because of what he said. Yeah. It's so loud.
Yeah.
And be able to watch him actually work it. And you mentioned before he started playing the left arm and how that controls the air in the bag. Yeah. It was incredible.
I'm like you. Amazing Grace tears me up every time.
It is so amazing. Joining us on the line, we had to delay it a little bit, but that's okay. His name is Steve Robinson. He is the best investigative reporter in Maine, maybe in all of New England. He's with the Maine Wire. The segment is sponsored by Standard ICF. You can find out more at standardicf.net. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, we appreciate you being here. You got to follow a tough act. We just had Bailey's Mistake in with some Irish music. It was unreal.
That's fantastic. Actually, I went to high school, and one of my best friends in high school played the bagpipes. I was always very jealous of him, but he was very talented, and you'd be amazed at the amount of money you can make busking with bagpipes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody can sit on the corner and play know, the guitar or something with a hat out, but not everybody can play Amazing Grace on the side of a street in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's extraordinary, and there is a huge demand for bagpipers. There's been a lot of events we've had over the years, and trying to find one, it's often hard to do. So you're absolutely right about that.
You know, it takes a lot of wind to blow a bagpipe, kind of like in Augusta. A lot of wind to get nothing done, you know?
So. As a professional transition, Joe. Very good. Very smooth.
Incredibly well done, no doubt about that. But it's true. Think about all the wind that comes out of that. Wow. So I'm going to let you lead this because you were telling me some of the stuff you had going. So why don't you just run that?
Well, I think first the news out of Augusta yesterday, a win for Republicans in the Senate, defeating by a very narrow margin yesterday an attempt to pass a $120 million Maine Care bailout. This is a package that is aimed at a current year deficit. And what this means is that when the lawmakers got together and they decided to pass the 2024-2025 spending plan with no input from Republicans on a majority-only partisan basis, they appropriated a couple $1 billion for Medicaid and came up short. So for some reason, the Medicaid program is overdrawn. It's $120 million in the hole, and the Department of Administrative and Financial Services started warning at the beginning of the year, hey, we're going to stop paying the hospitals if you guys don't get together and spend a whole bunch more money to bail out this program. So that's been the first priority of the legislature, has been coming together to figure out how to spend another about $118 million for Maine Care, and then an extra $2 million on some other programs, primarily this spruce bud, which is supposed to, I guess, come out of the ground like the cicadas do and ruin the commercially important forests up in northern Maine. So
but
you hear,
Steve,
a lot about the spruce bud these days.
Were you around in the 1980s when that was the big infestation? You probably not even born yet.
Briefly, in 1989, I was around. I was very concerned. I was very concerned with it in the first months of my life. But no, I understand. I understand it is a problem, but it doesn't necessarily have to be linked to a $118 million bailout of the Maine Care program. It's being used really as leverage,
right,
by Democrats in order to cajol Republicans into voting for this bailout. And what we saw come out earlier in this week was a supposed compromise from Senate Democrats that contained two pieces that were supposed to incentivize Republicans to vote for the package. There were two items of welfare reform, supposedly. I mean, this was kind of like fake theater welfare reform. One was a cap on emergency housing assistance that would kick in after 12 months. so that you could only live in taxpayer-funded housing for a 12 months with any three-year period. That could have been just completely redone and wiped away in the majority budget that's coming after this supplemental budget. And then the other one was a promise to, at some point in the future, hire a third party to come in and audit Maine's Medicaid program, the Maine Care program, which is the biggest spending category, the biggest program in the state. It's where all of the money is really being spent, not necessarily on the food stamps and the housing assistance and whatnot. So those were the two things that were dangled in front of Republicans. That worked in the House of Representatives. Enough Republicans joined Democrats to give them a two-thirds supermajority needed to pass an emergency bill. However, it did not work in the Senate. And then again yesterday, Senate President Matty Daughtry called the Senate into session at 11 o'clock. They spent all day procedurally going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, but could not get the votes needed to pass this package. So it was filed dead yesterday in the legislative files. Of course, it can come back. Representative Drew Gittin, who is kind of at the center of a lot of the Democrat spending plans, got a bunch of concept drafts kicking around. They could always copy and paste the text of this bill into a new bill. They're going to make another run at trying to get something like this passed. But basically, their two options are come out with some real welfare reforms, something that Republicans can actually support, or do this on a majority-only basis and use the same extraordinary occasion tactic that Democrats have used in the past to get just a budgets passed on a simple majority basis. Never been used for a supplemental spending bill, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't be used.
Right.
It could be, you know, we can do unprecedented things if we want to in Augusta, as we've learned over the last 6 years. The majority only spending used to be a taboo thing, even under Governor LePage, but under Governor Mills, it's become the norm. There's really no reason why they couldn't just go and do this by themselves. But they do seem to be interested in having Republicans' fingerprints on this Maine Care bailout.
Well, of course they do, because that way they can blame Republicans for this. Wayne Perry, I think you probably know him, who's a state rep out of Arundel, was on earlier this morning. I have been saying that this was about mismanagement of the Maine Care program. Wayne says, no, when we passed the first budget, this was an intentional act. They intentionally underfunded it because they didn't want the public to see the explosion of this program, and I thought that was an interesting take on it this morning.
Well, that could be the case. In either event, it's a mismanagement. Intentionally underfunding something or missing a forecast on how expensive the program would be. Either way, it's a flaw in the lawmaking and the appropriating process. And politically, the situation is that the Democrats for 6 years have ruled Augusta with an iron fist, and they've told Republicans, go sit in the corner. We don't want you to be part of the budget writing process. We've got this parliamentary trick that we've mastered, so we can do all the spending and we can run the government without you guys. So go sit in the corner, and we're gonna let the adults handle things.
Yeah, well,
and now we're in a position where we need $120 million to bail out the state's biggest welfare program. And just imagine running any business, any business owner in the world who's listening right now. Just imagine that you're looking back at the year, and you've got one of your sectors is $120 million more expensive than you thought it was going to be. You overrun your cost by $120 million. Now, instead of trying to address the reasons that you had that cost overrun, or figure out why you were wrong about it in the first place, or what's going on with that, you're just saying, "Now let's go take a loan. let's just go, find more money and throw it at it and fix the problem." That's basically what the legislature is trying to do. And the Senate Republicans stood up yesterday and said, "No, we're not going to do that." And there was a Republican senator who asked several times on the Senate floor, will you commit to passing a bipartisan two-thirds spending plan for fiscal years 26 and 27? If you will, I'll vote for this thing. And no Democratic senator would agree to that. No. So that tells you everything you need to know.
But, right. Steve, they said they're going to try as hard as they can to get there. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that goes a long way, doesn't it?
Well, but these are the people that don't know a girl from a boy, so I wouldn't trust them.
So, Steve, I predicted here, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, that they're going to roll all this into one biennial budget. It will not be a supplemental budget and then a biennial budget. It's going to be rolled into one. Because what's the difference? You know, if you're going to adjourn, you might as well do it once and not twice. And just move on. But they're going to get screamed at by every healthcare provider, and it's all going to come down to the Democrats. And the Democrats, it's going to be their fault, and people are going to scream. You just had a hospital in Waterville close. Now you're going to put other people like myself on, we're going to have to eat the cost of this until July, and that makes no sense. No sense. So am I going to lay off people? I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. And it's all going to be the Democrats' fault.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult for...
Yeah.
It's going to be very difficult for them to politically spin this one.
Right.
And that's the consequence of doing majority-only spending over the last 6 years.
Right.
When you toss one party to the side, you get to own the consequences of whatever happens. And that's, whether it's the transgender policies that have been passed over the last 6 years, the financial policies, all of the way the COVID money was spent, the education policies, all of it is purely the result and responsibility of the Democratic Party, because they have cast aside any Republican input whatsoever on the largest, bills that Augusta does, the biennial budgets. So I do think it's going to be a challenge for them to figure out how to spin this politically, and whether they go with two, extraordinary occasion adjournments, or roll it all into one and do it that way. Either way, I mean, we're looking at just an unprecedented, breaking of political traditions, but those things don't really seem to matter.
Right. There is no tradition anymore. It's a new norm.
Exactly.
It's a new norm to punish the other party.
I agree. I think that the new norm will be majority-only biennial budgets,
right.
But that will rely on if there is a future Republican majority in the House and Senate, it will rely on them understanding that that is the new norm, instead of what you had in 2010, when you had the first Republican trifecta in forever. They came in and said, well, we're going to be nice and bipartisan, and we're going to do things the noble way, and we see where exactly that olive branch
they learned the lesson.
But I would say the Democrats are in a real pickle right now.
Yeah.
They need $120 million to bail out MaineCare. They've got some of their staunchest allies, screaming at them over the stoppage of payments.
Right, all those nonprofits.
It's going to be a real, real, real tricky thing. And I'll say that the Medicaid program for people, I know even some lawmakers and people who are involved in politics, when you start to talk about Medicaid and Medicaid policy, their eyes kind of start to gloss over. But what you need to think about is Medicaid is basically USAID for Maine. On the surface, it's a program that is supposed to provide healthcare services for the poor, and that's what it did for a very long time. But then you had a number of policies, including Obamacare, which greatly expanded the level of services, mostly funded by the federal government, that the Medicaid would pay for. So now you have Medicaid paying for needle exchange clinics, Suboxone clinics. You have Medicaid payments going to NGOs for migrant services, for translation services. You have a huge bucket of services being provided by left-wing NGOs, and they're all tapping in to Medicaid. They're all getting funded through Medicaid. You might traditionally think... Go ahead, Joe.
Remember, Medicaid, Obamacare, has a 90% match back to the states, where normally it's about 62% for the state of Maine.
Right.
So they have all this federal money coming in, and that spigot may get shut off pretty soon.
Yeah, that's a big problem there. Let's not forget, aside from all the NGOs you just talked about, Steve, Janet told us it would be 60,000 people. It's 115,000 she's put on through Medicaid expansion. Let me ask you this question. Dee Dee and I were at a meeting yesterday afternoon, and after the meeting broke up, you know, there was small talk going on. Are some of the we heard that some of the senators are being threatened over this. Do you have any knowledge of it? If you do, you don't. Do you have any knowledge of any of that?
Well, I think the pressure on Senate Republicans to fold on this is extreme. And, you know, I think that there's tensions are running high. You know, there is an instance of a Republican senator who's received some, I would say, harassing or threatening voicemails that we're chasing down now to see if we can find the culprit. But nothing that I, you know, would report at the moment. Nationally, I think that you're seeing a very high level of swatting, targeting conservative media personalities. There are at least a dozen that I know of, to the point where, you know, Ray, you should probably go to your local police station and then let them know, you know, that you're not, you know, you're not ready to, you know, go on a rampage, and that, you know, there might be some hoax calls into the police department, because it is becoming a pattern. And, you know, I think that, you know, we're seeing an escalation in the tactics that the left is willing to use as they become more and more desperate. You know, they're running out of taxpayer money to fund their protests and to make it look like there's popular support for the programs and, I guess, philosophies that they support.
But Steve,
so they are growing increasingly desperate.
Steve, you have the leader of the party and of the state coming out and bashing Republicans because they didn't support the budget. You know, only a rookie negotiator would do something stupid like that. If you're a true leader, you're going to go up to the Republicans, talk to them, and say, hey, how do we get you your support on this? We need to do this. We can't leave people stranded. We can't leave healthcare providers stranded. We need to get this passed. What does it take? Yet instead, Queen Janet runs around and she goes, oh, the Republicans, they, you know, you can't trust them. What makes you think you could trust any Democrat's word?
Well, I'm not even sure that Governor Mills is actually that involved in these current negotiations. You know, her administration has basically come out and said, "Hey, we need this money, or we're gonna stop paying healthcare providers." So figure it out. I'm reliably informed that she's catching a little R&R down in Costa Rica right now. So her chief of staff
are
might
you serious
from the Blaine House?
Karen Bass all over again.
they haven't responded to my inquiries asking about it, but it's from a decently reliable source that
Unbelievable.
She's taking some vacation.
Hey, slow down, everybody's
entitled. Everybody's entitled to some vacation.
No,
she probably needs it after the week she's had.
Yeah, but we're in section, not when though. You're about to blow up the state. Wow.
So so this is reliable that she's currently in Costa Rica on vacation. While the legislature
the governor's office will not confirm it. They haven't responded to my email asking about it. So I asked them publicly on social media last night if the governor is on vacation, and I've put in a Freedom of Access Act request for any financial records related to her travel to see if there was any executive protection unit correspondence about her trip, because typically the state police aren't going to travel with her internationally as a protective detail, but they do coordinate with local law enforcement about the travel of the executive. So there should be some records that we can find, but given the way this administration handles Freedom of Access Act requests, we'll get a response back in 13 years. Yeah. No, not a chance. It's next year. Yeah. You know, I'll be an old man by the time I get records back on that.
Well, you could talk about Spruce Budworm then.
This is actually insane. Here they are. They're not going to be able to pay their providers. According to State Rep Wayne Perry, who was there and part of it, they did this intentionally, and she's taken off. I mean, this is just crazy. She's been reading her. She's no different than Zelensky and all these other people. They read their press clippings, the fawning media, the regular legacy media, and they believe all this crap, but nobody else believes it. You know, thank God for you, Steve.
Yeah,
I say
really.
This all the time. I say it all the time, and I'll say it while you're here. You're the best investigative reporter in Maine and most likely in all of New England. And if it weren't for you, a lot of this stuff we would not know.
Well, I appreciate you guys saying that. I'm just paying
attention.
You
just asked
the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I'll just say it. You know, I think there's two approaches to covering political news. There's acting like you're a referee in a cage match between Republicans and Democrats, and then there's actually observing what's going on and then communicating that with your readers, viewers, or listeners. And we prefer the latter approach. And, you know, I think that from my perspective, the negotiations would be going a lot differently, really, if you had John Martin or Troy Jackson down there, because they understood how to negotiate with Republicans a lot more. They understood that it was more transactional than philosophical. I think House Speaker Ryan Fecteau, Senate President Matty Daughtry, they are ideologically allergic to granting any sort of a victory or concession to Republicans. Yeah. There were a number of amendments that were offered by the Republican Senate leader, Trey Stewart. Any single one of those could have been attached to this bill, and they would have gotten the votes necessary to pass this. These were simple things like work requirements for welfare. If you're going to get a generous amount of welfare from the taxpayers in Maine, especially in this economy when the unemployment rate is low, Janet is always bragging about the low unemployment rate, and there's all these job openings. If you're going to get welfare, you have to do 20 hours of community service or prove that you're searching for work. There was an option to limit the number of able-bodied, childless adults who are on Maine Care. Just freeze new additions to Maine Care roles and reduce by 10%. Able-bodied, childless adults on Maine Care. The Democrats rejected both of those amendments. Yep. They rejected a number of amendments on the House side as well.
Go back to the work thing. Paula Page sought and received an 1115 waiver from the federal government on work requirements, and his thing was pretty loose. It was 20 hours of work, 20 hours of volunteering, or you had to be in a job retraining program. So it was pretty loose to be able to do it. Janet Mills rejected that waiver from the federal government when she took office. I mean, this was a time bomb waiting to go off. But I want to go back to something you said, because I think this is really important, and I want the public to understand the contrast. You just brought up the fact that Janet Mills, in March of this year, is in Costa Rica on vacation. Do you all recall when Paula Page, who had been going to Jamaica for 20 years, he went down in his first term down to Jamaica, as he had always done? They do it every year. Bill Nemitz called me and asked me if he was actually in rehab because for drinking.
Oh, yeah.
And then don't forget to follow up. Some jackass wrote a column in the Press Herald, never even having met Paula Page, and said he exhibited all the signs of an alcoholic. Never even met him. And they ran that damn thing because he happened to be in Jamaica on vacation. Think about the contrast. Where's the Press Herald or the Bangor Daily News reporting on Janet being in Costa Rica? They're nowhere. But back when LePage did it, they accused him of being in rehab, which, by the way, was not true. It was a load of bull you know what. Steve, thank God for you that you brought this up. You're the only person in the state that would. The rest of them are afraid of her.
Hey, Steve, tell me about this.
And I'll just say this is it's not like I have a picture of her down in Costa Rica. We have sources who are telling us that she's on vacation, has not been spotted, coming into the state house, and her office will not respond to inquiries asking if she's on vacation. If she was at the state house, if she was present in these negotiations, I'm sure that the governor's office would respond snappily and shoot down that rumor. But now that I've put it out on social media, maybe the fine journalists at the Bangor Daily News, maybe they'll be able to hunt this down. Maybe Bill Nemitz can come out of retirement and see if he can join her in Costa Rica.
Yeah, Bill literally called me and said, tell me the truth. Is Paul in rehab? He was in office about 3 or 4 months at that point. And I'm like, hell no. He's in Jamaica. If you knew anything, Bill, and Bill's a dear friend, you would know that he's done this for like 20 years. They go to Jamaica every year. And then they had the Press Herald literally had some guy who had letters behind his name writing a column acknowledging he had never met LePage, never met him, but had diagnosed him that he was struggling with alcoholism. None of which is true, but this is the links by which these no good, lying, deceitful, deceptive, reckless pieces of crap construct journalism.
Yeah.
And they're suffering the consequences for it. I mean, if you look at the main trust for local news, the Soros-backed organization that took over the largest newspaper company in the state of Maine, they're basically destroying local news in Maine. Yep. I've lost track of the number of top senior executives, people who I have, ideological disagreements with. I have a different view of how, a news organization should be run and what is newsworthy and what's not. But they're gone now. They've left. And they take with them deep institutional knowledge, historical knowledge, knowledge of Maine politics. They're no longer at these newspapers. Yep. Like Judy Meyer of the Lewiston Sun Journal, again, disagreed with her from time to time, but certainly respected her experience in the news business. She was the most recent resignation, and these people are going to be replaced by Zoomers and millennials from Florida and California who come in and have no idea. Right. They have no idea. They don't even remember Governor LePage or John Martin or any of these people. So you're zapping the experience out of all of these newsrooms. And I'm wondering to myself, perhaps maybe the goal all along for Soros was not to control the local news, but to destroy it in states where the progressives already had control. Because what benefit is it controlling the media if you can just destroy it instead?
Well, you take my hometown of Westbrook, the American Journal, which is now part of that conglomerate. 75 years it's been in operation. They're closing it. Hmm. They're closing 10 of these papers that have been around forever. They're reducing editions. I read the paper because I have to, and I've said it here many times. The day I no longer do this job is the last day that I will read the Press Herald because I am dumber for having read it every morning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't read the Press Herald. I'll say that. You know, I work in the news business, so it's not helpful for me to have to read it from time to time. Somebody will send me something outrageous that has appeared in the Press Herald, and I'll cover it from that perspective. It's good entertainment value once in a while,
right?
I think it's sad what's been done to that newspaper as an institution. I'm in a favor of more news rather than less news, even if it's hard left progressive news. The Bollard, that alternative paper that comes out once a month, that used to be interesting. There used to be some interesting investigative news there. Now it's just like the worst left wing critical race theory regurgitated all the time. Yeah. Like I think the state does better when there's lots and lots of investigative news and people know more rather than less about the things that are happening in the state, whether that's politics or corporate going-ons. But it seems like the media business is definitely struggling. It's definitely hurting now. And when you do, when you operate the way the Press Herald has over the last decade, it's hard to really feel bad for them.
Well, the problem is, though, is it's a storied paper. It was known around the country at one point. James G. Blaine worked for the paper at one point. I mean, this was a paper with a lot of history and a lot of influence. The old saying, as Maine goes, so goes the nation. Mm. They originated that statement. I don't know if you guys knew that or not. And it's just such a shame. It breaks my heart because, I grew up reading newspapers. It's like the Gray Lady. When I used to read it as a young man, I thought I was sophisticated. Now I feel dirty. I don't know why they've done this. I don't know what their purpose is. They are committing journalistic suicide is what they're doing. I don't get it. Yeah. Are we late?
Yeah.
Apparently we have to go, Steve.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys again next week then.
Can't wait, yes. Steve. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Robinson of the Maine Wire, sponsored by Standard ICF. Steve, thanks for being with us.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Bye. We apparently do have to run. We will see you guys. Today's Friday, right?
Yeah.
We will see you Monday morning at 6:07, God willing.
We fix people by fixing their car. I like being part of that.
It's a great feeling knowing that you've done something that looks good and you know the customer is going to be happy with.
We're doing great. I love my job. I love what I do and all my coworkers.
All the women that work here are fantastic and they want to be part of something bigger.
My future looks great at Moody's. The sky's the limit here.
If you're looking for a job and a great opportunity and a career, we're hiring at Moody's.
MTech means jobs. MEMA stands for Maine Energy Marketers, and MEMA's technical education school, MTech, stands for jobs. Just listen to John, a recent MTech graduate, and what he has to say.
I was looking to get into the trades. I was looking to go to trade school. I had basically like no mechanical experience, no hands-on experience. So I barely knew how to turn a wrench. It was awesome. They taught me pretty much all the basics for oil, gas, AC, refrigeration. If you learn skilled labor, if you learn a skill, then you'll always have work in that skill. I would absolutely recommend MTech to anyone who I ran into looking to go into the trades. It's a great school, gives you great hands-on experience, and it really gets you ready to go into the field.
To find out more, go to mtecenter.com or call them at 729-5298. If you tell the good folks at MEMA that Ray Richardson sent you, they'll take $100 off your tuition.
My name's Jeff Preble. I'm the owner of Standard ICF, insulating concrete form supplier here in New England. If you're looking for an insulated concrete form for a foundation or a whole house, we can help. Our forms are manufactured right here in New England, and if you're going to use one, why buy from away when you can buy from somebody local? Our website is standardicf.net. Again, my name is Jeff Preble. You can reach me by texting me at 207-831-4962. And if you're interested in forms, remember, we've been in the form business since 1989.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. This is your dentist. Do me a favor and feel the front of your teeth. How grimy are they?
Ugh.
It's time for a Crest Pro Health reality checkup. That grime is the buildup of plaque bacteria that can cause cavities in just months. You need to switch to Crest Pro Health. While most toothpaste stop working in minutes, Crest Pro Health's antibacterial fluoride protects for up to 12 hours to stop cavities before they start. So pick some up on the way home. Smile. Crest has you covered.
This 31-year-old student still living in dorms from Syria who is leading and organizing all these insurrectionist anti-Semitic protests, taking over buildings where it got him in Louisiana, about to deport him, and there people are protesting for him. Anybody protesting should be thrown out of the country. That's one. And then number two, in New York City, that is, we're going to have the St. Patrick's Day Parade will be the number one parade in the country. So that'll be fun. That's coming up on Monday. Joining us this hour, Brian Brenberg, co-host of The Big Money Show. Oh, he's not going to be there. Okay. And then Sebastian Lai will be with us, son of Jimmy Lai, the Hong Kong businessman. And the